You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Hello, my name is Mathilde. I am from Portugal. I am a podiatrist and I'm also a teacher at the Portuguese Red Cross Health School in Lisbon and also in the Oporto University Faculty of Medicine.
Hi, my name's Fran Game. I'm a endocrinologist. I work in Derby in the UK, where I run a multidisciplinary foot clinic, and I'm also the clinical director of research and development at the Hospital Trust. And today, Mathilde and I are going to be discussing the up-to-date 2023 International Working Group of the Diabetic Foot update on classifying diabetic foot ulcers. This is an update from the 2019 guidelines, but we've made a significant number of changes, both in the methodology, not necessarily in our recommendations, but in the methodology. Actually, one of the things we really struggled with, wasn't it, Mathilde, was people knowing what we meant by classification and what we were actually talking about.
Yes, one of the major changes that we've done was to develop a glossary of terms and also to try to explain what these concepts mean. So when we are talking about a foot ulcer in a person with diabetes, we will always be referring to a break of the skin of the foot that will involve as a minimum the epidermis and part of the dermis in a person with currently or previously diagnosed diabetes. Usually it should be accompanied by peripheral neuropathy and or peripheral artery disease in the lower extremity or even other complications. The other question is, what do we mean by classification? Because we have seen a lot of different types of tools and publications, but when we are discussing this, we are always meaning a tool that has the goal to create more homogeneity between groups of patients for which similar levels of care should be provided. The idea should be to try to standardize the modifiable factors that an healthcare professional should focus on so that they can improve clinical outcomes. But this does not mean that you need to treat everyone on the same group in exactly the same way, and it will not limit the role of clinical expertise. But at least it guides you for the basic things that you should do and at least try to guide your decision-making in a more critical way. The other thing that we also had a lot of doubts was that we need to understand if the clinical scenarios that we have envisioned in 2019 were still valid. And yes, we still maintain the same five clinical scenarios. We believe that the main goals for classification is for us to help us communicate between health professionals in the same or different levels, also to try to establish an individualized prognosis, to guide and assess people with arterial disease and or infection along with their ulcer, but also to allow clinical audit and benchmarking so that you can understand if your clinical care is up to date and if you are doing the best you can do for your patients. One of the things that we found out is still that although we have different scenarios with different purposes, it will not be possible to have one classification system that would fit all the purposes. So one classification will save the day and you can use it everywhere and every time.
So Mathilde, going through this process, we confirmed with our working group members and our external stakeholders that we were going to look at the same five scenarios, and we will discuss what they are a little bit later. But at the outset, we said that we changed our methodology. If we used the same five scenarios, what did we change in terms of our methodology?
Well, we started by using a really more thorough grade methodology. And so grade is a way of doing and grading recommendations and try to develop them and evaluate them in a more standardized way. And so for that, we have a really more complex process involved in doing this. So we started by defining key clinical questions to define what should be the important outcomes. And for this, we have used not only health professionals, but also patient representatives. We conducted a systematic review instead of just a critical review. That was what we have done in 2019. And for that reason, we passed to assess for 28 different classifications and included 149 studies that developed or validated these classifications. So this also brought a lot of complexity because this is not an intervention question. So in this case, it's more like diagnostic and prognostic. So it was really complicated to have a really standardized methodology. And so we have decided to first assess the value of each system independently. So to see if they were just developed, if they were validated, what were the measures involved in them. And then in the second stage, from these 28 different classifications, we tried to choose the best one or two that could be used in each clinical scenario. And this is also a change because in the previous round, we had one classification for each scenario. But now we have decided that to better mimic the clinical practice and the different settings, that we could have an alternative classification for also each one of the scenarios. And that is why we had two recommendations, one for the communication and another for the characterization of a person that has an infected ulcer. And in this case, Wi-Fi was recommended as the alternative system for both of these scenarios. So the question is, how can we sum this up? How can we translate to the audience what were the recommendations that we made, Fran?
Yes, I mean, having gone through that rather complex process and finding the five clinical scenarios that we previously used and had been considered important by the working group members and our stakeholders, we then, having been through that methodology, looked at which classification systems best fitted those scenarios. And we started off by saying that the SYNBAD classification should be used as the first line wound classification in people with diabetes and a foot ulcer, where we're looking for interprofessional communication. But it requires that each consisting variable should be described completely, not just a total score. And this SYNBAD classification, which is a very simple 6-point scale, should also be used for clinical audit and benchmarking. However, we recognize that for people with foot ulcers that are infected, when communicating with other healthcare professionals, a little bit more detail about the severity of that infection might be important. And so we included, for people with infected foot ulcers, the use of the IDSA, IWGDF classification for wound infection. And again, when we looked at people with peripheral arterial disease, where there were resources and where there was vascular surgeons available to see those people, those vascular surgeons may need a little bit more detail. And so we suggested, in addition, to use the Wi-Fi classification. So the SYNBAD system was considered the bare minimum for most scenarios in audit and healthcare professional communication because it's very easy to use and it's quite complete. It has the 6 points, the site, ischemia, neuropathy, bacterial infection, area and depth, either 0 or 1. So it's a very easy to use scoring system and it's been used in the National Diabetes Foot Audit of England and Wales. So it's very easy to use in clinical practice. However, this doesn't derive management, and certainly in management, we should always look at tackling ischemia and infection and look at those, taking those variables into account along with the site and presence of neuropathy. We then move to different techniques of management. As I say, we recognize that in many healthcare settings and with more professionals, more complex assessments are required, but we know that as a global organization, that's not feasible or accessible in many parts of the world. And so simple systems that can be done by the bedside with no specialist equipment are also available. As Matilda's also said, no single classification will ever be sufficient for healthcare professionals in every clinical context and scenario. But this bare minimum information is useful to standardize, audit, and guide clinical care. However, Matilda, you know, as we went through this process, we noticed a low level of evidence, and you know, we really do need some of these classifications to be better studied and validated, or even refine existing classifications. But one of the scenarios we struggled with was a prognosis of an individual ulcer or a person in front of us. So what do you think we can do in the future about supporting this clinical scenario?
Yeah, as you said, Fran, we really need further studies validating the existing classification that already exists for the other four scenarios, because we already have an idea of what works. But for individual prognostication, this is the tricky one, because if you need something to be more individualized, then you will need more detail and more inclusion of different variables. And this is where I think that new technologies and the use of machine learning techniques will be the future. We have seen already some classifications using these systems still on very early stages. We also acknowledge that this may be difficult to use in some specific scenarios, but in those where you can have really easy access to health records, then you should use that information to learn and to better have this individualized estimation of prognostic using these techniques. So I believe this will be the future and the only way to answer to these clinical scenarios. So at the moment, please read our 2023 guidelines, but I believe that in 2027, we will have some news about this clinical scenario, because we are seeing the rising of artificial intelligence and the way that we can improve the prognostication for a specific individual.
Thank you. Mathilde, it's been a pleasure chatting to you about this subject.
Always a pleasure to chat with you about this, Fran. So see you in 2027. And until Indeed. Then, please go and read our recommendations that are currently used. Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website. You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.